And welcome back to This Week on Santa Line. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And kind of have a short story this week, but a few big items around Windows Mobile.
Team Foundation Server, you know, your baby, really.
That's right.
That you love.
That's right. Your first app for the Zune HD.
Yeah. And so let's get right into it. Big story, though, is what's called Starter Edition for Microsoft Office. So what this is we are working with OEMs. So it's not going to ship in Windows, but we work with OEMs to have Office Starter installed on your PC. You go to buy a new PC from Dell. Mm-hmm. Typically, it would have come with Microsoft Works. Now it's going to come with Office Starter, and it's a reduced functionality version of Office that gives you some of the, you probably say comparable to, say, Microsoft Works,
right,
in terms of the features. The nice thing is it makes it really easy to be able to upgrade to the regular Office when you actually need it. Right?
So when you're ready to get the full-blown functionality, you just go by key, type in the key, you're good to go.
Right. So, yes. So customers saying, why isn't this, you know, built into the operating system or something better than, say, Notepad or WordPad?
Mm-hmm.
It will be.
I don't know what could be better than Notepad, but I'll take your word for it. So Windows Mobile 6.5 came out this week. Kind of some interesting reviews out there, but for a developer story, it's actually some kind of cool stuff. So traditionally, you can build apps using the .NET Compact framework. You can build mobile apps that render down to mobile devices. But now they've got this new a widget gallery concept.
Yeah, so you're able to do widgets, which maybe it's comparable that people are familiar with gadgets in Windows,
yeah,
where you were doing JavaScript and HTML. Those are really more for, like, you do Compact Framework when you need full functionality, but when you're just doing, say, like an app that, say, checks Facebook or something, all those APIs are available through JSON, which you can then do in JavaScript, and there's a much better IE rendering engine.
Gotcha.
Right?
And then there's also full details about the mobile app marketplace.
Yes, how to submit your app. You know, if you're a customer, you can get 24-hour refund. So if you buy some app and it doesn't actually do what it says it was supposed to do. So a lot of cool stuff going on there, too.
Wow, I love the refund concept. That's awesome.
Yes.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So moving right along. So speaking
right
of apps,
along.
Zune HD.
Speaking of devices.
Speaking of devices, there's a really great article out on Code Project that's getting some great reviews shows you how to build kind of your first Zune HD app, and most importantly, take advantage of the built-in accelerometer. So this is how to build like a level.
Right. So you want to say, you know, I want something to be level. I want that little dot to be, you know, in the middle, not on corner, anything
hanging
like
picture,
that,
whatever.
And this goes through, like, from file new project with Express to actually going in to calling the accelerometer libraries to everything else.
So you're using XNA Game Studio here, so you don't have to buy Visual Studio. XNA Game Studio is free, right?
Correct, but as of now, there's no way to, say, share your application with somebody that doesn't have DevTools.
If I want to send you my app, I can do that. I can email it to you. You can install XNA.
Yes, but I can't just, like, give you, say, a cab or something else.
Gotcha. So hopefully they're working on that.
Yes.
We don't know. Unpaid interns, Dan and me.
Yes.
So, all right, cool. That's a great app. And so we've talked a lot in the past about the Windows 7 engineering blog and some really great articles on there. I mean, even if you don't care about what they're talking about as it applies to Windows per se, as you go back to your software development organizations, there's a lot to learn from when you look at the way that we build colossal pieces of software like Windows. Well, now Office has their own engineering blog as well where they're talking about...
I like the word colossal. That's not used enough. I want, like, codename Colossus. That's my next project. I don't care what it'll be a Twitter client. I'm going to call it Colossus.
Absolutely. That's actually what you almost named your son, I thought. Colossus?
No. Damn, I forgot what that was.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So the Office 2010 engineering blog's out there, and they're talking about how
Damien
they build it.
That's what... Awkward.
And what I really like here is some of the UI sketches.
Yeah. So they go through, like, how we do user design research. You know, Larry had a video on some of the things for usability labs. They talk about how they go through the usability labs and starting at a sketch. This is what I think the user experience should be for Office 2010. Mm-hmm. And I love it. This is, like, their early sketch, and they go through step by step to, and this is when you're looking at, you know, you click the, what's it called, the little... the Office button. I don't know what.
Yeah, the
what's it called?
Yeah, what is that called? The Glimmer.
Something
like that. Yeah.
Something. And then to actually building out the page so you can see all the options that were available there, you know, size of buttons, et cetera. So it's kind of cool to literally see from sketch to finished product.
So it's kind of like behind the scenes when I go watch Lord of the Rings and then I watch the extras and they show all the sketches turning into the actual, you know, costume design, set design, all that stuff. So you know
it's a movie?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
It's a movie about something that actually took place. And
it's a faithful recreation, just like the Civil War movie.
They took some liberties. There's some composite characters, but you have to protect the actual people.
Of course.
So, and hobbits.
It's like Black Hawk Down.
Yes, exactly. So so Scott Hanselman was blogging about some comps that he made it sound like he snuck out of the MSDN meeting with a bunch of comps a few weeks ago.
He's hanging out of the printer and just like, ooh, this is going to be awesome for the blog.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me scan this guy in.
Yeah, but he's talking about some of the sweeping changes. Can we say sweeping colossal changes that are happening to MSDN? And we don't really have time to go into all of them right here, but if you're interested in what's happening to the MSDN dev centers, definitely take a look. There's a lot of stuff coming. Huge emphasis on the How Do I videos. So we know you love them, so we're coming out with even more, doubling down our investments on those How Do I videos, which show you a quick, like, hey, how do I use Microsoft Expression to convert from Flash over to whatever?
Yeah, right? And a lot of it is, too, is like Scott goes through what are the scenarios, right? So it's like, get the stuff I need. Like, give me an Express tool that I can download right away, or the WebPI tool to get basically started. What's the SDK? You know, people that want the reference material or the sharpening the saw, as they say.
Nice.
For I want to learn something better. I want to be better at my craft.
Nice.
I don't want to lose another thumb on a project.
Exactly. So here's a Coding for Fun project. Who put this one together?
This is Mark Heath. So Mark's written for us before. People may know you may know him from such other projects as AnAudio, which is actually what this uses, and the Skype Voice Changer, which we've done a kind of fun video on, where you can actually disguise your voice. This is a simple app that shows how to do a voice recorder. So similar to the one that's built into, say, Windows, it's actually it's WPF, and it shows you how to do the actual. A drawing
Waveform
of the
kind of.
And this is actually visualized. So step by step, if you haven't played, if you're doing any sort of audio programming, you should definitely check out AnAudio and then look at this in terms of how to build sort of your first app using it. And Mark's done probably two other articles on his blogs that you should check out as well on how to do like looping sounds and programming.net, audio and .net.
Nice. And then you can always go back to Dan Waters' post on Coding for Fun, where he really breaks down, like, how do you look at audio from...
What is audio?
Yeah.
Multi-channel, like mono versus stereo, what does it all mean?
All the technical nitty-gritty stuff that you audiophiles love. I've been waiting to use that word all day.
Yeah. I think X-Files. Okay.
So this week, actually, this happened late on Friday, so we didn't get into last week's show. Brian Harry blogged about... Brian Harry's the guy who runs the Team Foundation server team. He blogged about a new way of setting up Team Foundation Server 2010, which will be coming in Beta 2, that we're kind of referring to as the basic configuration. So right now, when you set up Team Foundation Server, you have to set it up on a server like Windows Server 2008. In the past, had to set up SQL Server reporting services. Dan's lost many years of his life working on this.
You know how hard it is to assign a work item to my wife when I have to go through a 14-step install process?
I know. He's not kidding, folks. He actually uses Team Foundation Server at home. It's kind of disgusting. But even as the Team Foundation Server evangelist, I can say
it's
that.
It's too far.
Yeah.
It's too far.
Yeah. You had to set up SharePoint. So now what we've done is we've kind of blown away all those requirements. There's now a new Team Foundation Server basic configuration that allows you to set it up on a client operating system. So you set it up on Windows Vista, Windows 7 if you want to.
Yes.
So for all of you that still have SourceSafe kicking around, time to get rid of SourceSafe and replace it with Team Foundation Server.
You get all the power of Team Foundation Server without needing a server and without the pain of setup. So this is easy mode for a TFS setup.
Right, exactly. But you don't... you don't get all the functionality that you would get in the full-blown version, but you can upgrade. For example, SharePoint doesn't run on a client OS, so if you want to take advantage of SharePoint, then you will have to upgrade to the server version, but that's all facilitated by the setup, so you can start small today, and then when you decide you want to take advantage of some of the other features, you can move up to the full version.
So source code control,
mm-hmm. work item tracking, and build. Yeah, those are kind of the three main major areas that you get with TFS Basic. And then if you go up to the higher version, you get the SharePoint integration, you get reporting.
Licensing changes.
So this is the... Well, we're not talking about licensing.
I almost get you very much. Yeah. Oh, I'm here to leak stuff.
Yeah.
See, it turns out unpaid interns, Brian is a little higher on them when it comes to TFS stuff.
Yeah.
Well, almost gotcha.
Well, but the marketing team will be making some announcements.
Sometime. Yeah, you're like Cleo with your vagueness there.
Yeah.
That's great. Call me now.
So, Riccio Mariani. So, apparently you guys forgot to invite him to the filming of the Visual Studio documentary.
No, Riccio was actually Riccio was in the list. You were on the emails.
Yeah,
you know.
Right. He was.
But I think it's actually great that he goes through his own personal history, because he gets to go into so much more detail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he talks about, like, you know, the... One, his personal experience in terms of, you know, just being the hacker on the first PCs, and then the 8086 came out, and he had 64K addressable. How the hell do you program that? Everything was about optimizing.
Well, that's all people ever need, right?
So. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then going through, like, the first C versions of our developer tools, which weren't C++ yet, and everything through modernizing. So he's gone up to three parts already.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to know all the history on Visual Studio, Rico's got some great stuff there.
And this is part one. So.
Yeah, this is part one of at least three. So.
Exactly. So very cool stuff.
Yep.
Time for Picks of the Week.
Picks of the Week!
So speaking of Team Foundation Server, I can't get
enough of it.
It's kind of true. But I blogged this week that very soon we'll be releasing Beta 2. And Beta 2 is going to have what we call a Go Live license attached to it. So if you've never seen the Go Live license, basically, by default, Beta, CTP, pre-release software doesn't allow you to do anything real with it. So it's there for tire kicking, it's there for you to give us feedback.
Non-production use.
Once we get to the point that we feel really good with the bits, we sometimes issue what's called a Go Live license, which allows you to actually take that beta software and use it for real production purposes. So you can build production applications, and you can take those applications and you can run them on the new version of the .NET framework, .NET Framework 4, for example. That's what we're doing with Visual Studio 2010 and .NET Framework 4 once Beta 2 ships.
And TFS?
Including TFS. And
so everything.
Everything. The whole kit and caboodle. And what we've done...
Now, is there a process to apply to this?
No, there's no process to apply. It's just baked into the ULUS. When you get it, if you decide to, there are some terms you have to agree to. For example, it's not too bad, but for example, if you're an ISV and you're building software that relies on the .NET Framework 4, you can't redistribute the .NET Framework 4 to your customers. You have to have your customers go get that from Microsoft. And that's just a safety precaution to make sure that your customers aren't taking on beta software that they're not aware of. For example, and there's some other restrictions in there as well, but it's not too bad. What I blogged about this week is actually some really good guidance that the product team worked on putting together that tells you how to think about going live on Team Foundation Server 2010. And these are things that you should be doing today to get the right hardware in place. Think about how you're going to migrate your users over. Upgrading from SQL Server 2005 to SQL Server 2008, for example, that's a requirement of Team Foundation Server 2010. So a whole checklist that you can take a look and say, how do we take advantage of Team Foundation Server 2010? I get this question every single day, and now we've got an actual cookbook that you can use to go through and prepare.
Oh, look at you trying to, do your job. So my pick of the week is... these are five concept mines, and you have to see the video for these.
Oh, this is awesome.
So we'll go to the video, but these are five concept mice put out by research, and Larry had posted the video, maybe it was earlier this week, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. but they show different user interactions for different
mice in a multi-touch world.
Mice in a multi-touch world. Here's a couple different ways that you could interact with them. And some require actually no mice interaction at all. It's just, you know, your hand is next to it, and there's effectively a camera tracking your fingers.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy, actually.
Yeah, this is cool. So I guess we'll call it a show and go to the clip.
That's right. We'll see you next week, and enjoy checking out multi-touch mice.
Thanks.